Welcome to SolidWorks Heard, a show about tools, tips, and technology surrounding SolidWorks engineering and the web. This is episode 450 for September 16th, 2013. September Tech News. Well, hi, and welcome to SolidWorks Heard. I'm Lou Gallo. Well, today we're going to jump into the tech news as episode 450, on the brink of 500 episodes, and it's actually been a pretty good year for me, just because I haven't been stressed to try and get shows out. I apologize that the volume's not there, but again, as I've explained before, it's a little bit tough to really have the depth into something if there's not a lot going on. So SolidWorks has been, this is that time of year that's a little bit quiet, but get ready, because now that SolidWorks 2014 is in pre-release, everything is now lifted. We can start talking about the product, and we will kick off the What's New series here shortly. So hopefully in the next week or so, I'm going to start compiling and putting together all the data that I need to, and I'm ready to dig in with you, and we'll blow through the entire PDF of What's New and talk about every detail that we can about what to expect with the next release of SolidWorks 2014. But before we do that, we're going to jump into all the tech news. There's a lot of stuff on the SolidWorks blog, mainly because the launch happened on September 9th for 2014 SolidWorks. So there is all of the sneak peek posts. I would say about half to maybe a little more than half of the posts in the last 30 days have been about this this release. And they actually had a couple of sneak peeks before it actually came out. But on September 9th, it's just been littered through all these little kind of tidbits of what's to come. There's a lot of tech alerts as well. The monthly FAQ is out for August, so we'll jump into that. And then there's a whole slew of industry news that we'll discuss as well. So let's get into it. The tech news for September. Now, just as I've done in previous times, I'm kind of going to break the SolidWorks blog down into two segments, the tips and the news. Now, remember, last time we talked about tech news, we talked about the new launch of the SolidWorks tech blog. So I would imagine many of you who listen to the show probably want to check that out. It's always a good one. And before I kind of get into the SolidWorks blog, I'll just kind of run down these because they've been pretty active up here. So if you go to SolidWorks or blogs.solidworks.com/tech, you'll see this is where they put all these like specific tips. And on August 21st, they put one out called SolidWorks World 2014 CAD Admin Bootcamp. They talk a little bit about that. And then they jump into a whole slew of tips. Basically, almost every couple of days, they put something up here. So they put another one up here about the Admin Bootcamp. They put one on Intersect Reverse for the SolidWorks Part Reviewer, Intersect Slice. They talked about using the Flex feature effectively, DriveWorks Function Wizard, the SolidWorks support news, which we talked about, and then also Beginner's Guide to Set Up Drawing Templates and Sheet Formats in SolidWorks. Also talked a little bit about the Intersect tool, Style Splines, and Extrude Thins. So again, if you're looking for more kind of vertical topics on different aspects of SolidWorks, this is definitely the place to go. So remember, blogs.solidworks.com/tech. So if we go and check out the regular blog, I'll first kind of run out all the tips. The tips that were posted in September and August were: don't panic, most likely it's not responding. This is kind of in regards to some of the more recent Windows 7 and Windows 8 operating systems. Most of the time, these actually show an unresponsive look. We always call it the beta white when it kind of turns the whitish color and it'll say non-responding. It was always explained that in XP, it took about 30 seconds for an application to show non-responsive. When Vista came out, they made that about 10 seconds. And then when Windows 7 shipped, it was actually 3. And I think it still has maintained that 3 seconds. So, sit on your finger, don't click too many times, and just hold out. It's probably just thinking. A couple other things. Two tools you might know about and may not, but may find useful in SolidWorks. This is actually a post by GoEngineer talking a little bit about two tools that probably don't come on your radar very often is SolidWorks RX, as well as the Admin Dashboard that launched last year. There's a post about SOLIDWORKS modeling methodology. We talked about this before. Part 3 is now posted up there. Working with multi-bodies in SOLIDWORKS, SOLIDWORKS drawing tip, convert views to sketch, some interesting applications with that. The unknown golden tools of SOLIDWORKS simulation. This is actually pretty cool. Some of this you may not know, some of the things that you can actually save and reuse in the task pane, which is pretty cool. SOLIDWORKS geometry pattern, a simple option to make patterns regenerate faster. Again, another approach post. I really like these. As well as getting ready for SOLIDWORKS 2014. I've actually done shows like this. We've talked about how do you prep for a new release. This is always a good read to kind of get yourself ready for the next release. And the last one is SOLIDWORKS Composer, automating the creation of control assembly instructions. Now, the news area was also pretty good. Obviously, we talked a little bit further about some of the things that came out with Android and eDrawings, but this did actually come out after the last time we did the tech news, so I figured I'd mention it once again. You can go to the Play Store and download it. No updates as of yet, but so far the release is actually pretty good. There's a couple little weirdities to it. A lot of times it seems that the Android version of eDrawing seems to associate itself with a lot of different files. So in Android, if you try to open something, it usually gives you suggested applications, kind of like the open with inside of iOS. And for some reason, it associates itself with pretty much anything, a PDF, a picture, a contact information. So I noticed when I installed eDrawings, I was seeing eDrawings icons all over the place. So hopefully they'll get that fixed soon. But so far, it's a nice release. I'm glad to see it on the platform. There was a couple of interesting posts. One of them was called the Georgia Tech Freshman, and he mentions the Iron Suit, Iron Man suit. And it's a really interesting, it's a little freshman kind of convocation where they kind of talk to all the freshmen to get them all fired up about being in there. And it's actually pretty funny. You got to watch the video. I can't do it justice. Another one on here is the Colorado teenager, Easton LaChapelle. 3D prints the next generation of prosthetic limbs. Again, another pretty interesting little read. Cardiovascular Systems Inc. and SOLIDWORKS Composer. I thought that was kind of an interesting application. And then also see what's new in SOLIDWORKS 2014. Obviously, this past week, September 9th, marked the unveiling of the SOLIDWORKS 2014 product line. So we will be getting into that, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, but this was kind of their official launch day, and all of its glory is now revealed. So if you want to get your hands on it, you can download pre-release from the customer portal. And there was a ton, like I mentioned, a ton of posts on the SOLIDWORKS blog about the feature set that's coming in 2014. So if you want to get more details on that, I definitely recommend go ahead and you know, check out the posts. They're all kind of prefaced with sneak peek, 2014 sneak peek. So go check that out. And that's everything on the blog for the last 30 days. All right, well, the tech alerts were actually pretty straightforward this month. SOLIDWORKS 2014 pre-release 1 is available for download from the customer portal. Obviously, you have to have access to that to download it, but you don't have to, you know, do any special beta silencey stuff. You can really just download it, test it out. But remember, it's pre-release, it's not production. So make sure that that's on a separate, you know, setup. You have separate data sets, yada, yada, yada. You know the drill. Also, SOLIDWORKS 2014 Enterprise PDM pre-release 1 is also available for download. So you can get your hands on those, test them out. I definitely recommend if you are somewhat of an early adopter and you guys usually implement around, you know, SP01, I would definitely make sure that you get the pre-releases downloaded, test them out, make sure they all work. Now, there's also a customer satisfaction survey. Obviously, this gets mailed out every year. It gives, you know, feedback to all the resellers and support centers that support customers across the world. And it is very important that you fill it out so we can get input. SOLIDWORKS holds this stuff pretty high in regard. They definitely, you know, make sure that they share the results with us that receive and take the support side of it so we can really kind of understand where we need work and how we can improve and things like that. So if you do end up getting one of these, take a few minutes, fill them out. I know that in the past they've actually been pretty lengthy, maybe 10, 15 minutes of your time, but they ask you a lot of specifics and how you use support, and it really gives us good feedback. So if you have a spare minute, please take a chance and keep your eyes peeled for that. Now, we also like to kind of roll into the support monthly FAQ, and this is something that they've actually been doing a really good job on. They've been getting this out very regularly, which I absolutely love, and I hope to see more of it, continue as the months go on. But so far, it's been right on time, it's up to date, and it has all the good stuff. So let's take a look now at the support monthly FAQ. Now, if you don't know where to find that, if you just go to forum, I'm actually going to do it live here. I'm going to go to forum.solidworks.com. And if you click on the blog posts area, usually it'll take you right to it. So usually if you scroll around, you'll get right to, there's a few things up here too. I always recommend if you can go to the forums under forum.solidworks.com and click on the blogs link at the top. It'll take you right into a number of things that are worth mentioning. One of the things that they talk about is the call for papers. If you want to go to SolidWorks World, maybe you can't get funding to go, a great way to do it is to share your knowledge of SolidWorks and be a presenter. It's a lot of fun. You can get a free trip, and your presentation topics can be submitted now. So remember, we're going to talk about being at SolidWorks World 2014 in January, but right now, if you check out the link, I actually put it in the show notes, you can click on it. It'll take you to the call for papers, and you can click on the link, and it'll walk you through the step-by-step, asking you exactly what you need to submit and things like that. And, if you get accepted, you'll be able to have a trip to San Diego and present your topic. Now, with the whole introduction of the SolidWorks Tech blog, there's been some kind of interesting things. So just to kind of give you a little bit behind the scenes, for me, whenever I go and check out tech alerts, the first place I go is I just go to SolidWorks.com. I usually click on support, and you'll see on the right-hand side, you usually see your tech alerts. And most of the time, they post the support monthly FAQ there. There's a link there. Now, as I mentioned before, you used to be able to go to forum.solidworks.com. You used to go in there and click, and you could go to general or blogs, and you would see the support monthly FAQ. It looks like they've now moved that. So I am not seeing that in the blogs portion. They did that in July, but when I saw the link in the tech alerts for August support monthly FAQ, they actually called it SolidWorks Support News August 2013. And what was interesting is it is actually now in the tech blog. So if you go to blogs.solidworks.com/tech, you should be able to see it in there. So it's probably a good one to actually subscribe to, because you'll be able to get that update as soon as it comes out. So if you check that out, you'll notice that on August 6th, they pushed out the support news for August 2013. And this kind of overlapped. Actually, it looks like this was supposedly out, but I don't remember seeing it last time we talked. So I think I covered July's. So it says, welcome to the new edition of the SolidWorks Support Monthly FAQ. Lots of news this month within the 2014 beta program still underway. Obviously, that's now over. And the SolidWorks World 2013 proceedings and many other interesting solutions from the knowledge base. So SolidWorks 2014 beta program, they talk a little bit about the beta phase is still in progress. I believe it's over now, but they talk a little bit about some of the things in the third week. But operating systems. So this is the first one. Obviously, you want to have a heads up on this. SolidWorks 2014 will be the last release to support 32-bit operating systems. So make sure that's the case. Make sure you have that in place. Obviously, we chopped XP support in 2013 SolidWorks. 2014, they're going to chop 32-bit, or they're going to allow 32-bit, but in 2015, will not install on a 32-bit operating system. Now, obviously, Windows 8.1 and things like that we'll talk about a little later. A lot of operating systems, and actually a lot of PCs nowadays, it's pretty hard-pressed to find a 32-bit system. Sometimes you'll find them in tablets and some of the convertible laptops, but for the most part, if you buy any type of system nowadays, at least for any type of production work for SolidWorks, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be 64-bit. It says, as a reminder, here's a table summarizing the compatible OS versions. It is adapted from the solution ID S-019383, and it just kind of shows you a matrix across the board. Now, SolidWorks World 2013, now this happened this year, beginning of the year, but the SolidWorks World 2013 proceedings site is available. So the best part about this is you can watch breakout sessions, videos, download breakout session presentations, check out photos. It's just basically a way to kind of recap and get some specific details about things maybe you attended or weren't able to attend and want to get some tidbits from some of the breakout sessions. Now, this is obviously a great way to, you know, just be able to kind of get an official, you know, kind of potluck of all the stuff that happened at SOLIDWORKS World. And if you are kind of searching for a nugget or two, remember, if you ever go through that breakout session manual and you can see all the things there, it's great to just be able to download it, skim through it, find a few things, and maybe it gives you some ammo to pitch to your management to get to SOLIDWORKS World the next year. Now, they have a couple of kind of highlights of some of the things on the presentation site. It's really well laid out, but definitely check it out. The preceding site, I believe, if you just go to solidworks.com/SWW/proceedings, you should be able to see it. Now, the last part of the SOLIDWORKS monthly FAQ is the noteworthy solutions from the SOLIDWORKS knowledge base. So I'm just going to kind of read the title. Some of these are actually pretty good, especially if you use Enterprise PDM. There's a couple of good ones in here. But the first one here is, how can I find the correct English translation of a SOLIDWORKS Enterprise error message reported against SQL Server in a non-English language? So this is actually for solution S-063481. And they talk a little bit about how to do that. It's a little bit verbose, so I don't want to really go into it. But it's a good one to know. This is another one, very common. What are the most basic steps to run a SQL trace and capture on EPDM performance issues? So that's another one that I actually use this for a couple of other tools. It's actually a pretty neat little tool. You can actually run a profile to kind of capture how activity is done inside the database. And then you create a file that you can then read into this tuning advisor. And the tuning advisor will actually go in and suggest ways to improve index speeds and search speeds. And then the coolest part about this tuning wizard is that it gives you the recommendations and you can implement from the tool. I actually had just done this recently with a couple of other tools, and it actually is a pretty neat little thing. Another one in here is, what is the procedure to migrate the electrical server information from one computer to another? Another good one for those that are adopting the new tool, SOLIDWORKS Electrical. Another one is, what preliminary troubleshooting should be done for cases where SOLIDWORKS crashes upon uploading SOLIDWORKS plastic add-in? So again, another new tool from ours, a couple of little kind of tidbits from the support group. And another one here is, where can a flowchart which summarizes how handle mate redundancies in SOLIDWORKS model be found? This is actually a pretty cool one. It's under solution ID S-063158. And it just shows you kind of a workflow of how mate redundancies in general happen. And it can definitely be an asset when trying to figure out issues that may be popping up inside of advanced motion simulation. And another one is how to run a design study with specific combinations of variable values using defined scenarios. This is obviously a pretty key piece of SOLIDWORKS simulation, but they give you a good rundown. It's a pretty good post. So I definitely recommend checking out the FAQ for this month, because it's actually really jam-packed and a lot of good stuff. All right, and the last part of the show I've been doing is industry news. And industry news means CAD industry, it means tech industry, and really there's a lot of stuff. Again, as I've mentioned pretty much for the last 3 months, you know, summer, there's usually a good span of announcements, especially across the big three, Apple, Microsoft, and Google. There's a lot of stuff that comes from them, because this is what they typically do. Beginning of summer, they usually have a developer conference. That gets all of the geeks like me into a room, and they show all the new stuff, the new kind of new APIs and new things that are coming and going to launch. Nothing's usually out yet. Sometimes they'll announce some early hardware, but for the most part, they try and, you know, get all of the software updates and kind of pre-announce some of the things so developers can start working through the summer for the fall launches of, you know, new operating systems and new hardware and yada yada. So now we're in that phase now where summer has kind of come to a close and a lot of this stuff is starting to come out. So we talked last week, Google had a whole bunch of products announced and a whole bunch of stuff coming out that was brand new. Well, it's no different. Obviously, in industry news in general, you know, we have Microsoft actually launching, and it's going to be a free upgrade. So for those of you that actually have Windows 8, Windows 8.1 is going to launch to the public as a free download or free upgrade for Windows 8 users on October 17th. So if you are lucky enough to have an MSDN or TechNet subscription like I do, you can actually download the RTM version right now and actually install it. I just got it downloaded. I'm actually going to, you know, go through the upgrade and see how things go, see what it breaks. I have a lot of things invested when I upgrade because I do have my whole development environment, and I always worry about busting that kind of stuff, but I'm always willing to take the plunge, so I'll keep you posted on that. Google also chops the price of the Nexus 4. Remember, the Nexus line for Google is all of their kind of blessed hardware. It's usually kind of reference design. The Nexus 4 came out last year. It was a pretty impressive device by LG, high resolution screen and, you know, good size specs. But the only issue for a lot of people was that it's a 3G. There was no LTE in the phone. But they did chop the price. They actually sold out of the 8-gig version, and rumors said that they were not going to be replacing it, which gave a lot of suspect to the Nexus 5 or the new Nexus 4, or whatever they were going to call it. Well, the interesting part was that Google also did a little announcement, a kind of a public announcement of the next name for the next version of Android. So you may or may not know, Google Android is typically named with a number, but it usually also has a dessert last name, and they go alphabetically, kind of like hurricanes. So the next version was K, and so people were thinking, and actually internally it was kind of termed Key Lime Pie. That was going to be the next version. Obviously, the version right now is Jelly Bean. And they announced that it was going to be called Kit Kat in a conjunction with Nestle, and I guess in the U.S., Hershey's. And a lot of people were kind of mad about that because it was not just a generic dessert. It was, you know, kind of blatant, you know, promotion and whatever. But in that reveal, they had a little video that they put up on YouTube, and there was a couple of people that almost looked like they were staged taking pictures with their phone. And they were essentially, they looked like a Nexus 5. It looked like about a 5-inch phone, had a lot of specs to it. So I have a lot of the links in the show notes too, but they got some specs on it. It actually looks like it's going to be like the LG G2. It's going to be a very similar size phone. It looks like it's going to be about a 5-inch screen, which is a ginormous phone. It's kind of like the Galaxy line and the HTC One and even the Note. But you know, that's kind of an interesting thing coming out of Google. So it looks like they possibly could have another piece of hardware and a new version of Android coming out shortly. Google also releases an interesting little tool. And I'm a big fan of the Raspberry Pi. I actually own two of them. One of them I actually converted into a little web server and is actually my remote repository for where I store code. When I write something, I commit it to this remote repository. And I love the Raspberry Pi. It's $35. You throw an SD card in it. It runs on an ARM chip. It's all open source. And it's a pretty neat little device. And so I bought the first one, you know, about, I don't know, beginning of summer. I've been reading about it since its launch, and I kind of didn't really have a project. And when I started looking at a lot of the servers I was running, I thought, you know, I retired the Herd, which was running on a big Ubuntu server. And, you know, I didn't need that anymore. My other server was more of a development thing. And so I kind of really just got into doing a lot more digging on Raspberry Pi. So Raspberry Pi is used for a number of different applications. People buy them because they're relatively cheap. They can put them in all kinds of different automation projects, program them. You can put different operating systems on them. It's a pretty neat little device. And so on my second one, I had it sitting at home, and I had it set up as kind of a web server again, just so I could, you know, build stuff on it and kind of see what I wanted to do with it. And I was thinking of some home automation projects, and all of a sudden, this release came up. Google released basically an operating system for the Raspberry Pi that essentially it's a distro of Linux, but it is completely built to be a web application platform. And so you download this thing, you can go to, I think it's goo.gl/coder, and you can read and watch a video up there. But if you download it, you can download it in no time flat. I threw the disk in. I threw my little SD card in the side of my laptop. I clicked on the application. It installed it on the disk, and I popped it into my Raspberry Pi and rebooted it, which means you unplug it, plug it back in. And within seconds, I went to coder.local on my local home network, and boom, I was logged into a cool little interface. I can actually write web applications on the fly through a browser completely in Chrome. And so you can essentially create a web application development environment for free. And if you don't have a Raspberry Pi, for about $50, because you could buy an SD card and a cable and the board, and you'd be all set. And it's just a neat little thing. They got a couple of examples up there. They got some real advanced examples. They have a kind of an asteroid, kind of an Atari asteroid game that they wrote, all HTML5. They have another one up there that has like an eyeball that follows your cursor and it blinks. And they have another one up there that's just basically like a moving canvas with JavaScript and a couple other things behind it. But the coolest part about the examples is that you can click on them. They have a little link that says hack that allows you to just adjust simple variables without really getting into the nitty-gritty of the code. And you can see it live update as you play with it. But the best part about it is you can create new projects. It has tabs for the HTML, the CSS, the JavaScript, the Node.js. So you can basically build very, very dynamic little things in a little enclosed environment. And you can also export them out into a zip file and send them to someone else, and they can open them up automatically in there, and you have all these nice little projects, and it's just a really neat little project that they threw together. But that may be a little bit more propeller hat than most of you, but you know, if you've ever wondered or wanted to dig into trying to build websites or even build web applications, it's a pretty neat little thing, and it for very little cost you can pretty much learn. You can go to codeschool.com or something like that and follow lessons along, and you'll have your own development environment. So I thought that was kind of a cool thing. Google does a lot of these programs to get people interested in computer science. So that was pretty cool. Apple also did some unveiling this week. They revealed details on the next generation of iPhone. Essentially, the long of the short is that they took the iPhone 5, they upgraded a bunch of things in it, like the camera and the chip and the processors. Screen and kind of enclosure is identical. They have a fingerprint authentication tool. They bought AuthenTech about a year ago, and now they're basically integrating that into kind of the lock screen, so you can unlock the phone with a finger press. You can also buy things on the iTunes store with it. It's a pretty interesting update. Not a lot of kind of huge changes, but you know, they also did something interesting. They took the iPhone 5 out of the lineup, so you can still buy the 4S, and then they have now the 5C. The 5C is essentially the identical components of the iPhone 5. No fingerprint scanner, any real hardware updates. But the back of it has a plastic cover, and it comes in a whole bunch of colors, and it's $100 cheaper than the S line. So I don't know. It's, you know, it looks like it's probably kind of pointed more toward kind of the teenage group. It's not really a ton cheaper, but they did unveil it. The iPhone 5C went on pre-order on Wednesday and will ship on the 20th, and the iPhone 5S will go on sale at 8 a.m. at the Apple Store, and you can also probably pre-order at 12:01 and on the 20th as well. So Apple has a few things out. They also launched iOS 7, which is their next major update. I currently have an iPhone myself, and I have a developer license. So I downloaded the latest and greatest and been checking it out for the last week or so since the Gold Master came out. And it's definitely different. I personally think it's a pretty good update. There's a lot of things that they did change that were aggravating, being someone who uses both Android and iOS. But there's a lot of good things in it. I think it's a pretty good update, but you have to be prepared for big, big change, because iOS 7 is definitely different. But you know, after using it about a week, I don't want to go back. So I do actually like it. So there's a lot of things in the market, especially around mobile. Mobile is definitely getting a lot of focus, and there's great devices on both. They actually, the president of DDI, he has a Moto X. He showed it to me, and it's a pretty nice phone. Again, very well built. Definitely a kind of one-for-one comparison to the fit and finish of an iPhone. But there's a lot of choice out there right now, and as a consumer, that's the best thing. And the last thing I wanted to mention in industry news is MyCADBox. You've heard me talk about them. They were actually behind CAD Faster. We talked about it as a way to do some kind of collaboration and upload and markup. And they recently did a big update to their measurement tools and their markup tools, and they had a great post out kind of updating and talking about some of this. Now, when this tool first came out, it required a plugin and a number of things, but they have kind of converted to more of a web-based tool. It does run completely inside the browser, and they're making good incremental changes to the service to really make it interesting. If you want to get pricing information, you can go to mycadbox.com and check out for more details. All right, well, that does it for September. There's a lot of stuff that's been happening. Hopefully you follow me along on my industry news. I know I kind of just start to go to town on some of the details, but you know, I read this stuff quite a bit. My tech blog actually successfully have moved over to Feedly, and I'm using that quite regularly. I still have all the same things. They made it really nice and clean to move over from Google Reader, but I'm still parsing anywhere between 300 and 400 articles a day. There's a lot of stuff that comes in. A lot of it's just duplicates, so I just scroll through it. But I get about 15 minutes to a half hour every night where I mark a lot of these things that catch my eye, and I try to mention them on the show, because I know a lot of people who are in tech and in engineering, you know, they like to hear little tidbits about what's going on. So for those of you that enjoy it, awesome. I love to hear it. If you don't and it's not really your cup of tea, I apologize. It's a little bit of a passion of mine. So hang in there. It's only a few minutes, but we're going to start with the What's New series here soon. So I'm going to start preparing things this week. I hope to get the first show out this weekend, and then we'll try and do about every couple of days. So I was probably going to do maybe a Sunday and Wednesday release. We'll see how things go. I may actually end up pulling that back and just doing weekly and doing a bunch of pre-recording. I do have a lot of content to cover, and so I usually end up doing between 10 and 15 shows to cover them all. We'll have to see the details. I've been looking at the What's New PDF now since beta came out, and it looks like it's probably going to be about a 10 to 12 episode series. So we'll jump right in. We'll start doing two a week, and before you know it, you'll be through all the What's New and know exactly what you need to dig into. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, you can hit the comments section or email me at lou@solidworksherd. Don't forget to follow The Herd on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook by searching for SolidWorks Herd. This episode of SolidWorks Herd was sponsored by Digital Dimensions, Forward Engineering Solutions, online at www.ddicad.com. Music was provided by 21 Against by the means of Music Alley at musicalley.com.